What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Those who suffer miscarriage can be met with a wall of silence after the event. And indeed, many might not even announce that they were expecting. And so they can feel isolated and unable to talk to anybody. There are a host of questions, fears and worries that can be raised by such an event. Now, joining me to talk about her experience and the need for more research is Emily Duffy, the writer behind the blog Not Another Miscarriage. Emily, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
It must be a devastating thing when you have a baby that's much wanted and then it just doesn't happen.
It is. It's absolutely devastating. And I think it not only is about the loss of the baby and the future and all the thoughts you had around the pregnancy, but it's also the loss of control, or the loss of the idea that you can have control over your life and plan the future and things like that, especially with recurring miscarriage.
Now, they tell us that it's quite common. So do we know how common it is for any woman of fertile age to have a miscarriage?
Yeah, so a miscarriage, a singular miscarriage, they're not entirely sure, but they think it's between 1 in 4 and 1 in 6 people will have one miscarriage. And then for recurring miscarriages, which is what I have, they say it's 1%. Now, I have questions about that figure. I think that's probably a lot more, because a lot of people don't record their miscarriage, don't go to the doctor when they miscarry. And so I think that there's a bit of an issue around the data that we collect around it. So I would say that, especially my own experience of talking to people, is that it may be much more than 1%, that people have more than one.
Now, what persuaded you to kind of go public on all of this?
Yeah, I suppose I felt an incredible amount of isolation, especially after number 3. And I looked at that particular statistic of 1%. I was like, God, there must be a tiny amount of people who are actually going through this, and I want to connect with them, or I at least want to talk about it and try and build community. So, and I suppose I started writing out of instinct as well. I wanted to process what was going on. I didn't have anyone else to talk to that had been through it. So I did it, and then I wrote it. I started writing for myself, and then I decided, do you know what? I'm actually just going to publish this. And I just immediately got like amazing feedback and huge amounts of people getting in touch, and then people who I didn't even know getting in touch and talking about how they had been through something similar.
You know what we all do? We go to Dr. Google first thing to find out about any condition we might have. So I presume you went online to try to find out how much information there is about recurrent miscarriage. What did you find?
Well, what I found was that there isn't a huge amount of in-depth research. I think that's beginning to change very slowly. There's a charity in the UK called Tommy's who does particular research on recurring miscarriage. But what I found was that there's a lot of open-ended questions about, like, maybe the immune system plays a role. Maybe the endometrium plays a role. Maybe genetics plays a role. We don't really know. And I suppose when I spoke to my doctor, he told me a story of one woman who had had 13 miscarriages and had just delivered her first baby. And he said in the bed next to her, there's a woman who's had 4 normal pregnancies and delivered 4 healthy babies. And he's like, I don't know what the difference is between those two women. I don't. So
I remember, you know, the old wives' tale was that if the baby was miscarried, that the baby wasn't right.
Yeah.
And it was nature's way. This was, if you like, the folklore around it.
Yeah.
And that's still prevalent, I think.
I think so. And in some cases, look, that's true. I mean, in my last miscarriage, we were able to thankfully genetically test the tissue, and it was a trisomy 16, which means it was chromosomally abnormal and it was never going to develop into a healthy baby. However, we don't know if that was the case with the first two.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nowhere for us to go with that. And in a lot of cases, it can be down to maybe your body isn't making the right types of hormones and it is a normal chromosomal issue. Maybe there's something wrong with your immune system. And there's a huge amount that we don't know. So they think that maybe half of miscarriages are down to chromosomal issues, which is the case, that is not going to develop into a normal pregnancy. But the other half could be down to really preventable stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking earlier to somebody about how, you know, in Victorian era, we thought that, you know, infant mortality was just a thing that happens, that some babies just don't survive. And obviously we would never think that now. And I think that in the future we will look at miscarriage like that as well, that actually the fact that we didn't used to investigate and give people answers and take it seriously is as barbaric as we thought that is.
So what happens typically if you miscarry? Who do you talk to? Do you talk to your GP? And what does the GP say? Or is there somewhere else you have to go to get, if you like, scientific analysis?
Yeah, so until you've had three miscarriages, it's unlikely that you'll be referred to a recurring miscarriage clinic. So there's the Leaf Clinic in the Coombe, and there's a recurring miscarriage in the Rotunda as well. If you've had one miscarriage, unfortunately, a lot of the time you just get sent home to let nature take its course. I remember I went into the Coombe in the middle of the night and they said, look, you know, here's some paracetamol and go home and just it'll pass naturally. And it did. And then I was feeling very lost. And there is the Miscarriage Association of Ireland who are there to provide, you know, support and emotional support. But I suppose what I was saying was I needed more than emotional support. I needed science. I needed evidence, and that there isn't the curiosity there that I think that there should be.
Now, miscarriage can happen at different stages in the pregnancy, and I presume, well, the physical experience would be different later in the pregnancy Absolutely. Than it would be earlier in the pregnancy. But what about the emotional experience?
Yeah, it's incredibly lonely. It's incredibly isolating. I think when you have a wanted pregnancy, no matter of what gestation, you are attached immediately. I think mm-hmm. the parenthood and motherhood kind of comes immediately. And it's this unambiguous loss of somebody who hasn't had a chance to exist yet, who you really, really wanted and you really, really wanted to meet. And because most people don't announce their pregnancies before 12 weeks, which I actually think, to be quite honest, we should be telling people, because then, like, if we lose it, we should be held and supported in that grief. People are really lonely in it because it's like, well, what do I say? Like, I was pregnant and then I wasn't, or I lost a baby, or, and then the experience will be different for everyone. But yeah, it's an incredible grief, and it's an incredible loss of control. Like, I can't look, most people, and it's great that most people get pregnant and say, I'm going to have a baby, and they plan it that way. Or, you know, people are like, oh, I'll try and get pregnant in July so I have the baby, you know. Like, I have no control over when and if I will have a baby, and there's a loss in that.
The unfairness of it that, as you say, some young women, particularly young women, will get pregnant at the drop of a hat, and even, you know, to their own time scale.
Totally, yeah.
And then you are desperate anytime, anywhere, please.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me hold on to this pregnancy.
Absolutely, absolutely. And look, it's great. I'm glad we're in a minority. But I suppose in my writing, I try to give as much space for all of the emotions, and jealousy and envy are definitely there. And I don't think trying to push that down or trying to sidestep that is a healthy thing to do. I think you have to give it space. And in that, once you give it space, you're much more able to accept that, like, look, I remember one of the things that I think, like, life is quite unfair, you know. And but I think that within that unfairness, there are also things that we can investigate. So, like, for example, shift workers are more likely to miscarry. Black women are 46% more likely to miscarry. The miscarriage rate in Gaza has increased by 300%.
So obviously stress plays a huge part.
Stress plays a huge part of it. But we don't really know, I suppose, like, that statistic around black women. Researchers don't actually have an answer because it's not deemed important enough to investigate why black women would miscarry more often than white women. And so what I'm saying is, I suppose there is the emotional side of it, that life is unfair. And then there's the other side of it where I also get angry, which is like, we can probably make it less unfair. You know, we can probably do something.
Now, are people dismissive? Suppose you have miscarried very early in the pregnancy and she was only pregnant a few weeks.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Yeah.
Do you get that kind of...
You get that. You get, it'll happen when it'll happen, or wasn't meant to be this time, or when you stop, the one that really gets me is when you stop trying, it'll happen. Like, as if striving for something is the thing that stops it from happening. But I would also say I said those things to myself. Like, if I'm really honest, I said, like, at least it was early, at least I know I can get pregnant, you know, things like that. And I think mostly what we need people to say is, I'm really sorry. Even better if they if they do a bit of research about it and sure. say, you know, have you tried, you know, things like that.
And is there any kind of research, for example, on younger women? Suppose a girl of 12 gets pregnant. Is she likely to have the baby or miscarry? Someone who's 38, are they likely to,
yeah.
you know, more or less likely to miscarry? That kind of research, is that there at all?
So, yeah, so we do know things around age. So it's actually interesting before pregnancy before 20 is more likely to end up in miscarriage. So that thing that people, very young people, are always more
popping out
fertile,
babies to
it's actually not true. And that, yeah, once you go over 35, you're more likely to miscarry as well, probably because of chromosomal issues, because as eggs age, they get more chromosomal issues. So, yeah, so around 25 to 35, it's the least likely to miscarry. I mean, I'm under that age. So I'm 34 now, and we had my first miscarriage when I was 33. So I'm not sure. I don't think the age was a factor there. So we do know that. There is research around that. We do know, you know, certain things around supplementing with progesterone sometimes can help prevent a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. So there is some research being done, and Tommy's, Dr. Sue Quenby over in the UK is doing some really interesting research around the endometrium and how the endometrium sometimes may be too receptive. So we'll take in embryos that aren't actually going to result in a healthy baby. There's immune system stuff that can go wrong where, you know, sometimes your immune system can maybe not act as it's supposed to. But there's huge areas. There's also sperm DNA fragmentation. So a lot of the time we concentrate on the person who, you know, has the uterus or is going to carry the baby. But actually 40 to 50% of it is the male factor. And sperm DNA fragmentation in particular, there's a huge need for more research around that. There was one study that showed that men whose partners miscarried were much more likely to have high sperm DNA fragmentation, which means that the genes that they're passing on may result in miscarriage. So it's not all on the people who are going to carry.
And again, for women who are producing perfectly healthy eggs and allied with perfectly healthy sperm, is there any evidence at all that, you know, doing in vitro fertilization is going to be better or not?
Yeah, so not really, I think, is the answer. And I suppose it depends. I mean, I think every specific case is different. Say in our case, for example, that we know for a fact that our last one was chromosomally abnormal. So if we were to go for IVF, we could go for a thing called PGTA testing, which would test the embryos to see whether they're chromosomally genetically normal or not. And then we could implant it. Now, I don't know, though, if the first two miscarriages were down to that. Yeah. So we could be potentially throwing an awful lot of money at something that wouldn't have the results. I suppose we're in that place at the moment where we're going, well, would we like to have as much knowledge and power and control over the situation as possible? The answer to that is probably yes. But the advice by our doctor has been just roll the dice again naturally. So, yeah.
And finally, we should talk about the stigma. I mean, sometimes people just don't want to hear it, you know,
yeah.
when you share with them and you're upset because you've had a miscarriage and you've kind of nothing to show for it. A stillborn baby will get the rights of burial and yeah. all of that, but an early miscarriage, certainly not.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the stigma is, there's a few things going on with stigma. I think the first thing is that historically people went through this in silence. And so when they see somebody else talking about or openly talking about something that they maybe went through and buried in themselves, it can cause them to have a reaction, you know, around like, well, I went through that and I was fine and I went on to have children. And I think that a lot of the time people think of miscarriage as a step on the journey to having a baby. And then once you have that baby, you will be cured of all of the trauma that went, that was caused. And I don't think a baby is the cure. And I think that there is something particular around what we expect women and people who can have babies and get pregnant, including non-binary people and trans people. There's something that we expect them to be renewable resources, I think. Like that idea of just try again naturally, or that woman who had 13 miscarriages, like she's in my head all the time around, like we actually aren't able to bear this, you know, in the way that we are expected to, maybe by society. I know I certainly am like, am I able to roll that dice again? I don't know, you know, and what will that do to me? What will the long-term effect of that be? So I think we can definitely break through the stigma by saying like, look, this happened to me and it changed me fundamentally, you know.
Well, if you've been affected by any of the issues raised, you can contact the Miscarriage Association of Ireland. The helpline is 087 365 6887, or you can call the Samaritans helpline 24/7 116 123. And Emily Duffy, the writer behind the blog, Not Another Miscarriage. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.